Boeing 737 Maxes with loose bolts. On one plane, a door plug blew out, leaving a hole in the side of the aircraft, as you probably saw from all the stories. Airbuses have had more minor problems, but one of them was only remedied because a passenger noticed screws missing on the plane's wing. And we wonder if a kind of slackness or work pressure is creeping into airline assembly and plane maintenance, perhaps as we notice it around us in other areas of life. A headline in Aviation News Online: Boeing missing key elements of safety culture, employees lack awareness of the basics and reporting safety concerns, from an FAA report in the US. Air New Zealand's fleet being checked for microscopic engine cracks through no fault of Air New Zealand's. Is flying globally as safe as it was? Statistically, we're told that being in a plane is 19 times safer than being in a car. Is that still true? Two former Boeing personnel have their doubts in the case of the 737 MAX. They've spoken to overseas media. To get an expert view on this, our first guest this morning is a former big plane pilot and the former chief accident investigator for the Airline Pilots Association in the US. Dr. Sean Prochnicki is now a professor at Ohio State University in its College of Engineering. He coordinates extensive research coming out of its Aviation Safety Center. Sean, good morning from us. Thank you for joining us.
Good morning, sir. I'm glad to be here.
It's a safe bet that travellers have started wondering about the safety of plane travel now, especially after that Boeing's door flew off. In fact, I think people cancelled flights after that. That's the general question first. How concerned should people be?
Well, I can certainly understand that something as dramatic as that was is certainly increasing the public awareness. That certainly increases to a degree fear factor. But I think we need to keep a few things in mind. First of all, that this was an isolated event, although extremely dramatic, and had the potential, based on altitude, to have a very dire consequences. That we have such, you know, tremendous amount of flights every day around the globe without a major incident. Right? That there's literally 50, 60, 80,000 flights, whatever the number is. I think it's close to 100,000 flights a day globally without an event. I think we need to step back a little bit and focus, at least as far as the safety industry, focus on what we can do to mitigate it, prevent these things from happening, and bring this awareness back to the industry to solve these problems.
Yes. And just to follow on from that, the statistics, I think in countries like ours, one death for every 33 million boardings. And as late as the 1970s, I think the risk was 10 times greater than that. So that's the perspective you're suggesting, yes?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I fly extensively, and I have no problem. In fact, I have a trip coming up here in a few weeks. And it's on a 737. I don't know which model, but I'm not concerned about it. In fact, you can see how I'm concerned about it. I'm not even aware what model it's on. and I would have no problem putting my kids on an airplane, whichever airplane it is. So, and that's coming from a former airline pilot and accident investigator. Yes. Speaking. They're still so extremely rare that these are still incidents were happening. And here's something else we should keep in mind is that these incidents give us a glimpse into some of the problems into our system, right? These incidents give us a glimpse into some of the problems in the bigger systems within the manufacturers, Boeing or Airbus or Embraer or whomever. There's a few others. And it gives us an opportunity to get into those organizations and fix these problems before we do have an accident. So in some ways, and it may sound a little odd, but in some ways we can almost be thankful that these incidents have occurred, because that has given us the opportunity, because it's a red flag. We didn't have a loss of life, but we had a serious problem. Let's dig into it, find out what the problem is, solve the problem before it does result into an accident.
Sean, that's fine as long as the problems are being addressed. But there's that disparity in our perception between the statistics and the question we ask ourselves, if it's that safe, how come doors fall off and bolts are missing on planes? That's the jarring note that rings in our heads, isn't it?
Well, absolutely. When you cut back, when you operate more lean, you borrow from safety. And it's just quite that simple. And this is something that the business world just has never really been ever able to understand. And we have seen in these complex socio-technical systems with safety related to them, like air travel, nuclear power, space flight, the list goes on and on. This was at the very root of both Challenger and Columbia space shuttle accidents, is that when you operate more lean, as Boeing has done, as Airbus has done, you remove more and more quality assurance people, more and more checks on the assembly line, then these things get missed. So sure, you're saving some money, and you instead had, you know, and I'm making up numbers at this point because I don't know exactly how many they have, but, you know, let's say you had 10 people checking the step-by-step process, and let's say you cut it down to 10. Well, of course, there's going to be, you know, some decrease in the quality, and you can't just simply tell those remaining people, try harder and do better and make up for the other folks that are gone. You know, it doesn't work that way with human beings. And the people that run the money and that run the numbers, you know, the money people, they don't understand that. That's not the way it works. And if I were in front of those people right now, as I've been in the past, that's exactly what I would look them in the eye and ask them. They say, how serious do you want to get about this? Because are you going to focus on the shareholders and bonuses and other areas of financial interest? Or are we going to focus on actually the level of quality of your product coming out the door? It is just that simple. It's that simple.
Surely Boeing can say to its shareholders, hey, listen, we're slowing everything down. We're no longer going to be rushing planes out the door, if that has been the problem. Because it does Boeing, for example, no good to chase profits but have mistakes in assembly? It doesn't seem to make sense as a business model either.
I mean, you wouldn't think so. You know, the old adage is, if you think safety enhancements and extra money spent on safety is expensive, try having an accident.
Yeah.
You want to see some real cost. And I'm not trivializing the loss of life. I'm just talking to money people now. And, you know, for any money people listening, listen to me, because I have worked at an airline that's had an accident. I've investigated airline accidents. You want to worry about money instead of cutting corners on the assembly line? Try crashing another one of your airplanes. Now we're talking serious money. Not to mention, more importantly, the lives you devastate. Mm. And I would go one step further, sir, and say that I've always felt that it should be a requirement that those folks that make those decisions should be required to go out to the crash site and see the results of their company's choices.
Yeah, that's interesting. In Politico, Ed Pearson, you probably saw this, was a senior manager for the 737 MAX program. He says he watched as employee morale plummeted and oversight and assembly procedures faltered. He told his superiors but retired soon after. And when those fatal MAX 8 crashes happened, he testified before Congress. And he told the LA Times he would absolutely not fly in a 737 MAX. And we read that and we get nervous all over again.
Yes, absolutely. And, you know, that is a single statement that is definitely quite alarming, especially considering who this person is and their title. But I also know that we are also not privy to what other information is behind that statement, what other goals that those types of statements in that audience, the statement like that meets. So there's a lot of other political, personal things that can, you know. So, yes, that is alarming. But We just have to be aware that there could be personal reasons that was said. There could be political reasons that was said. But that is an alarming statement to hear for the general public to hear that. For those of us that do not work, for all the folks out there that do not work in the aerospace industry, like many of us, yeah, that's absolutely alarming. That's scary as hell.
You've referred to this briefly in that Alaskan plane, Sean, when the door flew off and they were only at 16,000 feet. What would have happened at 26,000 feet? And there was no one in the seats beside the hole by sheer good luck. And I mean, the door could have flown off and hit a stabilizer. It would have been a lot worse further up, wouldn't it?
Oh, absolutely. And the reason is because the differential pressure between the cabin and the ambient air outside would have been so much more greater. So the force would have been greater. So the amount of damage to the aircraft as the door came off would have been larger. But what you said is exactly right, that as the door went outward, they would have been going faster at a higher altitude because your true airspeed's higher. So we don't know what damage it would have done hitting the rear of the airplane if it would have done that. But here's the most important part. Here's the most important part of that. At a higher altitude like that, with that greater differential of pressure, and this is guaranteed, if there would have been anyone walking around the cabin, like probably the flight attendants would have been, and any passengers waiting in line for the lavatory, or anyone who'd have been foolish enough to be seated with their seat belt off, I still don't understand why people still do this, or in their seat with their seat belt on, but completely extended at the maximum loose level. I don't understand why people do that either. They would have been sucked out of the airplane. Quite simply. That's a fact. Yeah.
Okay, so we hope that we learn from all the lessons, as you say. Well, no doubt we do. And we hope that it gets progressively safer despite the disasters or the nearly averted disasters. What about, though, because you run human factors investigation and education, and here's a case you were involved in. What about the pressures on pilots and air traffic controllers now? There was that Alaskan Airlines pilot in the jump seat on Magic Mushrooms who tried to crash a plane on the way to San Francisco. And I know that's a case you're very familiar with. It's very hard to actually obviate, prevent human error in a more pressurized environment now, we suspect. Are we right?
Yes, when we're challenged with greater cognitive workload, yeah, error rate is going to go up. Absolutely. This is something that our controllers are faced with here in the US. And probably a significant role in a lot of the runway incursions we're seeing in our country is that the controllers are getting less days off. They're working longer shifts because we have a significant controller shortage. And we've seen this before with pilots. We've seen this before with contracts in the past that have had much shorter rest periods, worse schedules, and greater increases in errors made on the flight deck. So, yeah, all of that plays a role in challenging cognition and challenging our ability to make good decisions, especially when under pressure. And then you add fatigue in the mix, and that makes it even harder.
That Alaska Airlines pilot who wasn't flying the plane, he was just in the cockpit trying to meddle with it and nearly succeeded. He said, I think, that he didn't want to tell the airline about his depression problems because he would have been grounded. In other words, he didn't want the stigma. Surely the industry needs full disclosure. I mean, we're used to people being depressed in this day and age. It's no longer a terrible revelation. Does the industry need more disclosure about stress?
Here in the US, pilots are allowed to fly taking certain antidepressants once they've gone through a thorough screening process. So it used to be in the past, you admit depression, you're grounded for life, you're done, flat out. And then they realized, okay, there's a lot of pilots out there flying, taking pretty safe antidepressants with no side effects, and they're doing great, and there's no risk. So why don't we, basically what you said, just there's a lot of people in society doing this, and they are low risk. So they did that. And there's several drugs that are accepted now, and pilots, of course, go through an extensive screening process. So, that argument doesn't necessarily hold water, especially since Alaska Airlines, the union that they belong to, I know for a fact because it was the same union I belong to, provides a lot of educational information on just these topics. So he had a lot of help at his disposal on these types of topics.
Right, so his perceptions were skewed, and his fears were groundless, actually.
Why he didn't seek them out, why they, there was information available. I don't know if his depression was so bad that he realized he could not present it. Or maybe it wasn't even depression. Maybe he was saying in the media it was depression, but maybe it was a different psychological disorder that would be grounding. I mean, we don't know that too.
Right.
But I do know that, the Airline Pilots Association does have many great programs to help pilots work through these types of problems. And although they will be grounded temporarily, does help them eventually get back in the air under the right conditions with the FAA's guidance and support, of course.
The last question really is, if there is financial pressure being brought to bear on maintenance quality and assembly quality. When we travel, and you're traveling, I don't know where you're flying to, but if it was a country that wasn't first world, is there a growing or at least an ongoing safety disparity, Sean, between countries like ours and the flights you might take in certain other countries?
Yeah, there certainly is. In fact, it's quite ironic that you mentioned that because I might have the opportunity in a few months to go on a speaking tour in a certain part of the world that does have a much higher accident rate than the majority of the world. And I'm going to be flying on some airlines that aren't the worst of the worst, but they do have most certainly, and I might not go actually, just because of what you said. I'm considering this very carefully. So yes, there it's not equivalent, right? We can't, you and I are very fortunate where we live. We enjoy a very, very extremely low accident rate, which is true for, Europe and a lot of the world. But there certainly are places in the world. In fact, and I'm sure your government's probably the same. But I know the FAA has a list of certain countries that are banned to fly into the United States because their safety record is so poor.
Flying is literally safer than sitting on the ground, I was reading. And we read remarks like that, and it seems hard to believe intuitively. And we'd sooner be in a car because we have control. But of course, it doesn't matter how much control we have. It's far more dangerous in a car than on a plane still. That's the core comfort, I guess.
Yeah, I guess it is. And when you and I are finished, I'm on the second floor and I have to walk down some steps. And it's late at night. So you wish me luck, I guess. That's going to be the most dangerous part of my day right there.
thank you for joining us so late. Good luck on getting to bed.
Absolutely. As a pleasure. Always enjoy speaking with you, sir.